भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter Number 13, Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reaction. This morning's text number 10. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a brahmana, brahmahatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. Srila Prabhupada's report. After killing Vritrasura, Indra could not surpass the brahmahatya, the sinful reactions for killing a brahmana. Formerly, he had killed one brahmana, Vishwarupa, out of circumstantial anger. But this time, following the advice of the sages, he killed another brahmana purposely. Therefore, the sinful reaction was greater than before. Indra could not be relieved from the reaction simply by performing sacrifices for atonement. He had to undergo a severe series of sinful reactions. And when he was freed by such sufferings, the brahmanas allowed him to perform the horse sacrifice. The planned execution of sinful deeds on the strength of chanting the holy name of the Lord or undergoing prayaschitta, atonement, cannot give relief to anyone, even to Indra or Nahusha. Nahusha was officiating for Indra, while Indra, absent from heaven, was going here and there to gain release from his sinful reactions. So the text again, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a brahmana, brahmahatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. So we see in this narrative that Indra gets himself deeper and deeper in trouble with brahmanas. The whole thing begins by his giving offense to his spiritual master, Brihaspati. And then, later on, he had secured, as a replacement for Brihaspati, the son of Tvashta named Vishwarupa. And out of anger at Vishwarupa, he killed him. He was warned ahead of time that Vishwarupa is partial to the demons also. But still, he'll do well for you. You just have to tolerate his partiality because he was related to them. But Indra, even after accepting those conditions, lost his temper when he discovered that Vishwarupa was also setting aside a portion of sacrifice for the demons. And so Prabhupada says here, out of circumstantial anger, as we say, unpremeditated murder, he killed him on the spur of the moment. He hadn't planned to, he just lost his temper and chopped off his heads. So this one, they say here, is worse, because now with Vishwarupa it's premeditated. Again, he had learned his lesson. Now, because out of the reaction to killing Vishwarup. Now the Ritrasura appears out of his father's Vishwarup's father Twasta produced Ritrasura. So now he's in deeper water. But what to do about Ritrasura? He's Brahmana also. And so his killing is, he says here, a greater sinful reaction because it's premeditated murder. That's what they call, in legal language, first degree murder. The penalties are greater. There's premeditated murder. Second degree murder is what they call a crime of passion. You didn't intend to kill him, but on the spur of the moment. But the worst is premeditated. In cold blood, you killed him in cold blood. You planned it out. You thought it out. You weren't, your mind wasn't distorted by rage. This is premeditated, cold blood killing. So this is what he was doing. So here he says, a severe series of sinful reactions. But although he was told these can be mitigated, actually that's not the fact. Because if you commit a sin on the strength of atonement or chanting the holy name, then that actually, that can't help you. Nam no bala yasya hi pava buddhihi. Sinning on the strength of chanting the holy name, Prabhupada is described as the worst offense. I remember when I was 13 years old or so, 12, I was raised Protestant, and I had a friend who was a Roman Catholic, and we used to go out, and at that age, 13, we would do things together that were sinful, wrong things. And he explained to me that we couldn't do these things on Saturday night, because on Saturday morning he went to the priest and confessed, and on Sunday he went to the church and took communion, and so it had to wait until Sunday evening, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night was best, but then Saturday he had to confess. And I was astounded. He said, "No, this was wonderful." He said, "This way." He said, "What we do? I think we drank something." He said, "What we do?" He said, "It's a sinful activity. It's a sin, so I confess." Well, of course, the horrible, you know, just the anyway. That was his philosophy. And it took me a long time to realize that it wasn't, that's not of course, official Catholic doctrine. But it's what many, many people practice. That if they thought they couldn't confess and get absolution, they actually wouldn't do it. They'd be too terrified of going to hell. So they misuse this system of confession and atonement that the Roman Catholic Church has. And on that basis, they actually increase their sinful activities. And this fellow, this was his philosophy. We could go do so many bad things. He could do so many bad things. Actually, he was doing worse things than I was, because he was more confident of salvation. And then on Saturday, everything is clean. He just remembers it all. He used to have, you know, keep a mental list. I did this, I did that. Tell it to the priest, get absolved, say so, do some ritual atonement, and then it's all over. So this actually does not, if one is sinning on the strength of some system of atonement or of chanting the holy name, then it's not effective. Because look at how, Prabhupada says this is the worst offense to commit, because look at what one has done. One has employed the holy name in the service of sinful activities. Prabhupada said, he said, one should not use the holy name to further one's sinister purposes. He used that expression, sinister, or sinister activities. So one can't think like that. But we should understand that sometimes this idea may be there in a little bit of a subtle form also. So one has to be very careful that even subtly this notion isn't there, that I'll go do something sinful, but I really won't have to suffer the reaction because I'll be able to keep on chanting the holy name. I can always come back. Even if I fall down, I can come back. I really won't. I'm already protected from the greatest danger, and so on. So one may feel in some kind of saved position, and on that sense of somehow or other being saved, think he has license to do something sinful, and I won't have to suffer some terrible reaction. Well, it may be that sometimes the reaction is minimized, but one does not make advancement in Krishna consciousness because of having committed an offense against the holy name. Taken the holy name and used it for a material purpose. So this goes on. Prabhupada said in purport to the previous verse, the Lord's holy name certainly has the potency to neutralize all sinful activities. But if one repeatedly and intentionally commits sins while chanting the holy name, he is most condemned. So it does neutralize sinful reactions, even up to the point of preventing one from committing future sins. That should actually be the symptom of one who has taken shelter of the holy name of the Lord. Because sinful activities and their reactions exist in different forms. There are those from which we are presently suffering. The reaction has come, and already we perhaps suffering under various material disadvantages. These material disadvantages, chronic illness, legal problems, poverty, so on, or other things, being born and low and degraded family, just as in yesterday's purport. Kiratas, Gunandras, Pulindas, Purpishas, all these lists of bad groups to be born into. Why are they, it seems a little harsh here, sinful races. What do we mean, sinful races? This means that there are people who by culture engage in sinful activities. Is this racism to condemn whole people like that? That's just the fact that by their culture this is what you do. They are sinful. Svapacha, dog eaters, that may be the national delicacy. In fact, it is a national delicacy in some places. And so on. That means that persons who become born in such communities are that's because of a reaction to past sinful activities. A person who's born in a family of brahmanas or pious family, that's the reaction to past pious activities. So one may be suffering at present from so many reactions to his past pious activities, and these are can be impediments to Krishna consciousness. And then there's also the sinful reactions which have not yet appeared, that the one case is like the vine is grown, the deed has been done, the vine is grown, the fruit has been produced, and we've eaten the fruit. But the other case is that the vine is grown, the flower is there, but the fruit hasn't come out yet. They're all stored up waiting to happen. Because these things take time. Just as you plant a seed, the plant grows. You have to wait some time before the fruit comes out. So with sinful activities, there's some time before the reaction is visible. In many cases. Sometimes it's very quick, other times it takes a while. So we may have committed so many sinful deeds for which there's stored up already so many reactions. So I may be walking around perfectly happy, but the ticket's already prepared that the next 500 births I shall be some intestinal worm. So that reaction is waiting. It's already in the cards. And so then also there's the seeds of the sinful reactions. That is to say, I actually haven't, the seed is there is like the desire to perform sinful activities that is in the heart. That seed, the deed has to be done yet. I haven't done the deed. But I'm going to. And then as soon as I do, then the process begins. But still that impetus to do sinful activities or to commit sinful activities, those are like seeds that are within the heart. So all of these are destroyed by pure chanting of the holy name. All the karmic disadvantages that one may be presently suffering from will have no effect. They'll not be an impediment to my advancement in Krishna consciousness. If, of course, not that suddenly a person changes. For example, if it has been my, one of the things I'm suffering from is some bodily deformity or having been born in a low and degraded family, it doesn't mean that suddenly, boom, deformity is gone or it turns out that that wasn't really my mother and father. No, it's not like that. But that these things are no longer impediments. They no longer matter. They do not stand in the way of a person's doing wonderful devotional service. So the effects, even those that are already ripe, do not stand in the way. And the ones that are lying, that are ready, the fruit is ready to ripen, it hasn't appeared yet, they do not fructify, they wither on the vine. And those that are lying at seed, they never sprout. Different metaphors are used to describe this. The holy name is like an inundation of water, and the seeds will not sprout. Too much water, like a flood. When there's a flood, all the seeds become waterlogged and they're not able to take, then they don't sprout. So in this way, the holy name has this power to put an end to all kinds of sinful reactions. So a person does not have to suffer the result of the past karmic activity. That's at least if a person is seriously taking to the process of chanting the holy name. If one commits offenses, including this offense of taking advantage of the holy name, then it will not be so effective. But if we are taking to the process and trying to chant offenselessly, then the sinful reactions, all of them, disappear. So that's what's to be expected. So here, when you see somebody like Indra, he cannot be expected because he's sinning on the strength of he's killed a brahmana. But it will be a while yet before he can atone for this and get free from the sinful reaction. So this is his problem. So we have to be very, very careful. Our business is to properly cultivate the holy name of the Lord. We can spread this Krishna consciousness movement. We can preach to people. We can make a temple. But personally, we have to be engaged in the scientific cultivation of the holy name. It's a culture, the proper culture of the holy name. And that means Vidhi Bhakti. Under rules and regulations and supervision, properly following the order of the spiritual master, always chanting in such a way so as to try to avoid committing offenses. That's when progress takes place. If we're not chanting, there will be no progress. Or if we're chanting but we're not following the process, then our progress will be, if it's there, it will be imperceptible. You'll not be able to see it. And people, why is that? If someone is chanting and there's no progress, it's because of offenses. And nothing else. It's simply due to offenses. Prabhupada said that very, very clearly in several places. If we do not see it, any progress, this is due to offenses in the chanting of the holy name. So that's what it means. That's the definition. Someone wrote me once, what is sadhana? What is the definition of good sadhana? And the definition of good sadhana, correct practice of Krishna consciousness, is chanting while endeavoring to give up offenses against the holy name. So long as we are doing that, then there's good sadhana. But if we, because it includes so much, if you see what the offenses are, one offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. So this means that one order of the spiritual master is we should rise early, take bath, chant the holy name, attend the morning program. So we should make every endeavor to do that. If we are not making that endeavor, then we are creating, we're engaged in offensive activities. So the more we become committed to eliminating these offenses against the holy name, the more progress we'll make in Krishna consciousness. So this is one offense here, this that we see from Indra. We cannot sin on the strength of chanting the holy name. The holy name has a potency to relieve us from all sinful reactions. So if we try to use it to increase our sins, then that's the ultimate in perversity. And we cannot expect, if we do that, to go very far. So we have to be careful. It's not even that we make some cold-blooded calculation, but even if we are careless because we feel secure, because after all I'm a devotee, I'm chanting the holy name, so if I do something wrong here or wrong there, there won't be such big effect. Then that means we are taking advantage of the position, chanting the holy name, to do so many sinful things. So we cannot use the holy name for sense gratification. We take advantage of any facility of devotional service and use it for sense gratification, then the more we engage in devotional service, or what seems to be devotional service, the deeper entangled we get in material nature, so our position becomes hopeless. We've perverted the means of our freedom into the actual instrument of bondage. Then what's going to free us? We're in very bad shape. So we have to be careful about that. And try to be simple. Our aim is one thing. We wish to become pure devotees of Krishna. We wish to put an end to our engagement in material activities that have no connection with Krishna. We wish to become Krishna's 100% servant. And any tendencies otherwise, we should regret and have a systematic program to become free from them. And we should all be inquiring every day, how can I make advancement in Krishna consciousness? This should always be our question. How can I make it? What do I have to do now to make advancement in Krishna consciousness? A devotee should be striving and energetic in this regard. A businessman every day is thinking, how can I increase my profit? How can I make more money today? If he doesn't think like that, he doesn't grow rich. Every day is making a calculation. How can I increase? How can I increase? How can I increase my money? So a devotee has to think in the same way. How can I increase my Krishna consciousness? How can I surrender more to Krishna? How can I render more service to Krishna? This should be our constant endeavor. If we think like this, we'll make progress in Krishna consciousness. That's how we have to be energetic, determined, enthusiastic, and at the same time patient, because it also depends upon winning the mercy of Krishna. We should be willing to go on in that mood for a very, very long time, and just simply await the mercy of Krishna. So the text again. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura, and when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a brahmana, Brahmahatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. Any questions or comments? Yes.
For the very indulgent one, steal the wife of another person, you should be killed. But like in the case of a Vaishnava Brahmin, he must seem to be righteous after he committed sin, he wants to chant, he wants to rectify. Is this applicable in this age?
No, we shouldn't kill him. There's different types of aggressors who can be killed. So one time this happened in Los Angeles. Some devotee seduced the wife of another devotee, and so everybody, all his friends got together, that is the aggrieved husband, and pointed out to him in Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says there are so many kinds of aggressors that can be killed. So the guy went and shot him, killed him. And then Prabhupada heard about it. He was extremely upset. This Prabhupada, he was an aggressor. Prabhupada said he wasn't an aggressor, he was just a fallen soul. That's what Prabhupada said. And the devotee shot him, naturally he had to go to jail anyway, so nothing was served. So, yeah, that was Prabhupada's attitude in this kind of case. By the way, we see up there, Yani Kani Chapapani Brahmahatya Adikani Cha Tani Tani Panashanti Prolekshana Pode Pode. You walk around Tulsi Devi, it removes all, it's also Prayaschita, it removes all sinful reactions, and it says there Brahmahatya, the sinful reaction, killing of a Brahman. So don't think that I can kill a Brahmin and then come walk around Tulsi and I won't have to suffer three times around and that's that. You can see a gang of murderers going in with Tulsi Devi's to circumambulate immediately afterwards. This is not how it works. Anything else? Yeah?
If people are suffering from the sinful or pious reactions, is it because ultimately they are because of the separation of Krishna, because they came to the separation of Krishna, because they are not asking to suffer?
Because they are one?
And one out?
No, I didn't understand the last. I couldn't hear the last part of your sentence. You say that if people are suffering from sinful reactions, that's called enjoyment. Usually the reactions to pious activities is called enjoyment, material pleasure.
Is it because of ultimately everyone feels his separation from Krishna? Because what else can be suffering? It's only the
Lord. I can't hear you. Because what? This is because they're feeling separation from Krishna? They're not feeling separation from Krishna.
What is the reason that they're suffering?
Because they are separated from Krishna. They are. They are separated from Krishna from their side. Of course, Krishna is not separate from them. They still remain in reality connected to Krishna. But in their own consciousness, in their own awareness, in their own illusion, they are separated from Krishna. They're not rendering voluntary devotional service. So that state of not rendering devotional service is called separation. Therefore they're suffering or enjoying in the material world. And actually, of course, you're right, it's all suffering. But they don't know that. A pure devotee is indifferent to both of these things, both suffering and enjoying. He endures anything that comes, he is indifferent to it, whether it's suffering or whether it's so-called happiness. Therefore, it says in Bhagavad Gita, is the same in happiness and distress, because he is not, doesn't feel downcast in the one condition or elated in the other condition. He's doing service to Krishna. He's connected with Krishna. Krishna is pleased. He's feeling bliss. And whatever the material circumstances, whether they're materially auspicious or inauspicious, doesn't matter. But do those who don't, who aren't in that consciousness, they think that their happiness comes from their material condition, the state of the body. And so they go, when things are inauspicious, they're downcast, and when things are look good, then they're happy. But a devotee is happy all the time, because it doesn't depend. All these other happinesses, there's relationships that are formed on the basis of the body, and they're temporary relations. So sometimes the relations are good, and sometimes they break apart. But that relationship with Krishna, that's eternal. It's never broken.
Then what about the devotees? Like, Kamadas, they have to suffer so much from Kunti and all other sons of devotees.
Well, only,
is that because of separation?
Only superficially they were suffering. They always had the association of Krishna. And if ever they fell into a condition that was difficult, like Arjuna on the battlefield, that was because Krishna deliberately put them in that condition. As Queen Kunti said, I hope these sufferings come again and again, because they make me remember you more. And so therefore I feel more bliss. So it's not suffering, it's ecstasy. If I do some devotional, say I'm doing some devotional service, that's physically very, very difficult, for example. But the more I do that service, the more I remember Krishna. Then that physical difficulty appears to me as great happiness, because it brings me closer to Krishna. And I suppose I'm in a situation that's materially very pleasurable, and that pleasure makes me forget Krishna. Then I experience that pleasure as unhappiness, because it causes me to forget Krishna. That is why devotees develop a taste for austerity, because that austerity helps them remember Krishna. Therefore they seek it out. So they are attracted to it. Jamuna, do you have something? Anything else?
Is it he who creates? He who creates the desire and also the activities of the living entities, Krishna. That what the living entity can do is make choice. Or he forgets and take the position of Krishna because he saw that he is creating the good. Or he made the choice and just run as an instrument. Because who can act on his own self?
Who can what? You can't. He can't. It's all being arranged by Krishna. But Indra, the living entity, does do one thing. He chooses to either love Krishna or not love Krishna. Krishna doesn't choose for him. He chooses. I want to love you or I don't want to love you. You choose, I choose, not Krishna. He doesn't choose for us.
It's depending on Krishna how he deals with
them. He responds. Yeyata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajami aham. This is Krishna's words. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly.
How does he respond to this
He responds appropriately. Actually, Krishna uses the word bhajami aham. He says, I worship them. Bhajami means worship. I give my as they much as they give themselves to me, I give myself to them. So, as we surrender to Krishna, Krishna gives himself to us. As we turn away from Krishna, Krishna removes himself from our sight. As we don't want to see Krishna, Krishna increases our illusion by which he disappears. Krishna's here in every instant. We can't see without Krishna seeing first. We can't hear without Krishna hearing first. In our every act, in every transaction, Krishna is present. But to somebody who wants to forget Krishna, Krishna has hidden himself from our view. When we want to remember, he makes his existence more and more apparent. Okay? Yeah?
In the term seeing Krishna, does that also include remembering Krishna? Is remembering Krishna seeing Krishna?
Yes. Yes. That's right. Perceiving. So remembering, it's also a way of perceiving. Mind is also a sense organ. Yeah, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness.
So it's not I remember. No, Krishna gives me.
That's right. Well, yeah, and you want to forget him, he gives you forgetfulness according to your desire.
But you cannot forget. Even if Krishna is not there, you think of him. I mean, that's also him.
Yeah, just like here's the deity form of Krishna. In so many ways, Krishna is present. Time to stop. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.